This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. It is a pleasure and a pain and a pleasure to be with James Stewart, who brings us to the leading edge with the stories that he tells in Tangled Webs. There is a book called The Tangled Wing that is written by an anthropologist whose name is Melvin Connor, happens to be a friend. It talks about the human animal, where we are now is what he was going to call the book when he revised it completely. And he says that it's a tangled wing because we have not evolved fully yet. We're still coming out of our chrysalis. Well, these tangled webs seem to me to be a step backward, a devolution, not an evolution, that we are permitting behavior that we have already, as a species, said, that ain't right. You can't do that. And yet, as you describe all four of these individuals and the very clear story that, as an excellent, superlative reporter, you give us hook, line, and sinker, if you will, that this is unacceptable behavior. And yet...
Well, I know what your friend the anthropologist would say, but it does seem that we have to relearn these basic truths every so often, that you would think that history would have established this. I mean, it's in the Ten Commandments. I mean, depending on the translation, either thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not bear false witness. This came down in the tablets from the mountain. I mean, obviously, long before us, human beings had figured out that this is essential to civilization. If we're going to rise above the survival of the fittest, if we're going to have a real civilization, if we're going to have anything resembling a just society, this has to be a central element of it.
But the survival of the fittest is not Darwinian. That happens to be Herbert Spencer. That's a whole different thing. That's social Darwinism. And in fact, when you look at real Darwin, the real deal of what works in evolution, it isn't the cheaters and the liars and those who have gotten away with the bad stuff. It's those who are most functional, those who can be support. And the reason humans have done so well is that we do cooperate and we do push out to the sides people who are breaking the rules.
Right. Well, and I think we, as a society, establish notions of right and wrong and moral and immoral behavior. And then as a group, we have to sanction those. And I think this is where there has been a problem in modern society with the obligation to tell the truth, that we're too willing to sort of look the other way. We're too willing to stand up and cheer when Barry Bonds hits his, you know, all-time home run, even though we know he's been cheating by using steroids and then he lied about it before a grand jury. We're too willing to go to the voting place and vote for a party that whose president has just lied repeatedly to the American public. You know, we're too willing to, you know, ignore the fact that Martha Stewart committed perjury and then insists that she didn't. And by the way, I think there's redemption, you know, but I believe step one is you have to admit it and ask for forgiveness and then move forward, because that, you know, reinforces the broad value that has just been transgressed. And I think we all bear some responsibility with our friends, with our colleagues, with our coworkers, and with our children to make sure that we send a clear message that this behavior is intolerable and it's wrong and we're not going to stand for it.
Well, to go back to Darwin, it's not just humans. Franz De Waal at Yerkes and lots of others have done work that's basically social animals have rules. Mm-hmm. If you break the rules, then there are consequences.
That's what's so outrageous to me, is that the lack of consequences.
Well,
and
it leads to a degenerated culture, a corrosive and a corrupted culture. You see it now in cheating, seems to be just sort of built in all levels of education. It obviously is happening in sports. Politics is just wall to wall with it. We have functionally a network which is committed to
television and cable network
misrepresenting reality. The reality that anybody who had a sense, that the Enlightenment was relevant. I mean, we are just awash in this, and it is ultimately destructive. It's probably the single greatest threat to our civilization and this nation.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, again, you mentioned sanctioning it. people need to be deterred. They need to be encouraged on the one hand, and they need to be deterred on the other.
Isn't that what laws are about?
And that's what laws are all about. And
well,
then
and the enforcement
see,
of them.
And the enforcement of them. But you see in these stories, I put in the book in chronological order for a variety of reasons. I put them in this order. But in the Barry Bonds case, which came after Martha Stewart, one of the defendants says, well, you know, I looked at Martha Stewart and I saw she got a few months in jail, and that didn't seem to be so bad for her, and now she seems fine. So I thought, well, that doesn't seem so bad. It's worth taking the risk. And then another character in there, the lawyer who lied, his lawyer goes before the judge and says, I think you should, you know, give him probation. He shouldn't have to go to jail. And the judge said, well, why shouldn't he? And he said, well, President Bush commuted Scooter Libby's sentence. He didn't have to go to jail. So why should my client have to go to jail? The judge said, well, tell your client to write President Bush and ask him to commute his sentence. And he did make him go to jail. But nevertheless, the perception of many of the people in my story who are lying under oath is, well, the consequences are going to be very minor.
And it keeps building on itself. I saw a headline today in May of 2011, today, that said that Europeans come to this country so they can lie, cheat, and steal, that they'll do stuff here they'd never get away with or even try to get away with in Europe because, it's America. You can do anything here.
Including the head of the MIF,
right.
IMF, apparently.
Well, yes. And, this is an issue, I think, when you have President Bush commuting, condoning perjury. And, you know, to be nonpartisan about it, we had a president, Bill Clinton, who committed perjury, only grudgingly acknowledged and has never really apologized for it. Now, those are back-to-back United States presidents.
And George Bush put him for him. Commuting the sentences of the Iran.
Right.
I mean, this goes in my adult life. This has been a fairly consistent thing.
That's before we talk about Richard Nixon. I mean,
Well, we have appalling examples at the top of our government, and that's why I think we need somebody to stand up and say this is not acceptable behavior and it's not going to be tolerated in America.
There's also another piece of this, and that is the regular breakdown of the profession that is lawyers in this process. When the people who are agents of the court, which essentially makes them functionally our agents as citizens, they work for us representing this key ingredient in our society, which is justice. When they not only do appalling things, with almost no consequences. I mean, the belief seems to be, and we've seen this lots of other places, that if a lawyer, I mean, reading some of this, I thought I was watching Boston Legal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had that level.
Way over the top.
Well, it was over the top, but it was, in some cases, even more absurd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems we have a serious problem in legal education, but also in enforcement within the legal profession itself.
Well, the legal profession does a terrible job of enforcing its own code of responsibility. The number of instances that get referred for disciplinary action, only the most egregious cases tend to get referred. It's self-governance. It's self-policing. And
which
I guess we
works.
Shouldn't be so surprised that doesn't work all that effectively. But there are very, very few. I didn't uncover any examples of a lawyer being referred to a disciplinary body for knowingly allow a client to make a false statement in court.
That's appalling.
And you spent years looking at this.
Yes. And again, going to the enforcement issue, I asked, the Madoff example is so shocking to me because he lied, he was a terrible liar, the SEC investigators knew he was lying, they did nothing. And when I asked the SEC Inspector General, had the SEC ever referred a case for perjury to the Justice Department, he said he couldn't think of a single one.
Just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, you introduced Nero. And it's not the guy that I thought was the bad guy. It was the Northeast Regional Office of the SEC.
That would be the Security and Exchange Commission, SEC.
As bad as this other stuff is, the absolute failure, and this creates a whole other set of problems, which has to do with people's attitude about government, which is basically their attitude about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I can't characterize it any other way than just incompetence. Now, whether it's ignorance, stupidity, laziness, whatever, the performance of Nero in the Madoff examinations, ersatz examinations, is It would be, I would object if a 12-year-old was as inept as these people were. How do you account for that?
And the higher up you got, the more inept they got.
And, oh, by the way, most of these people are still in place. And the ones that aren't in place seem to think they were persecuted.
It's one of the most shocking stories I've ever reported. I mean, I went into this thinking Madoff must have been a genius lawyer because he survived four SEC investigations while running the world's biggest Ponzi scheme.
For decades.
And part of the problem, clearly, is they, you know, the lower level investigators, he was a terrible liar. He was inconsistent. He would tell the story to one person one day. Sometimes the same investigator, he'd totally change his story. Are options part of the model? One day no, one day yes. He says, wait a minute, didn't you just say that? That they were? No, I never said that. I mean, the guy is hopping up and down saying he's committing perjury, he's lying. They wouldn't refer the case to the Justice Department for further investigation. Why? I mean, I think part of that is what happens when even law enforcement itself comes to the view that, oh, well, everyone's doing it, you know, so why would we single out this guy when everyone else is getting away with it? And just kind of accepting it and shrugging, which is a terrible state of affairs in and of itself. But why, even if they weren't going to refer a perjury case, why they couldn't uncover the fact that he's running a huge Ponzi scheme is truly astonishing. I don't know that I can completely explain.
Part of this looks like, I mean, it was Nero. It was the Boston office.
Boston was more aggressive.
Exactly. And there is always the problem of regulatory capture, which again goes to the consequences for the regulators. I mean, somebody who guards the guardians. And the breakdown in this is, and I'm not sure, has it been fixed? Is there any evidence it's been fixed?
Not at all. In fact, you said most of these people in their jobs, all of them except one who quit before the scandal broke so she could be at home to take better care of her children.
And feels persecuted.
Yes, exactly. Feels it's unfair that she's been criticized.
James Stewart is with us. We'll be back with him in just a moment. We trust you'll be with us.